pick up the garbage. I said, what were you arrested for, kid? And I said, littering. And they all moved away from me on the bench there to carry on bawling all kinds of mean, nasty things till I said, and creating a nuisance. And they all came back, shook my hand, and we had a great time on the bench talking about crime, mother stabbing, father raping, all kinds of groovy things that we were talking about on the bench. And everything.
And that's where we have to draw to a close. Thanks, everybody. Catch you Monday. And love those loved ones you're around, and love them well, and be thankful for them. Peace. And always, always, we think of you. RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
This is the Quality News Network. The 2008 Democratic presidential race is tightening, Barack Obama gaining on frontrunner Hillary Clinton 6 weeks before the first balloting. That's according to a Reuters Zogby poll released today. Ending months of speculation, officials with the state of New Hampshire announcing that their presidential primary will be held on January 8th. Iowa's caucuses have led the way for several decades, but New Hampshire has had the initial primary for even longer, since 1920. The announcement comes directly after the state of Michigan's decision to hold their primary on January 15th. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice says while she's looking forward to next week's Middle Eastern Peace Conference in Annapolis, Maryland, she's cautious about expecting too much from a fragile diplomacy. World powers will gather to promote a peace deal between the Israelis and Palestinians in order to gain some stability in the war-torn Middle East. Thousands of displaced Iraqis have begun returning to their homes, according to the BBC. An estimated 1,000 Iraqis make it back home daily because of a drop in violence, improved security, and incentives from the Iraqi government. Pakistani President General Pervez Musharraf may leave his military post as soon as this weekend. That's according to a top official. He'll then take the presidential oath as a civilian, satisfying a key directive by Western powers, including the White House. In Bangladesh, shelters and rescue camps overrun with victims of the country's worst storm in a decade. Food and water now running out. More bodies are being discovered. Thousands remain missing. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown apologized to the public today for a security breach affecting an estimated 25 million people across the United Kingdom. Two computer disks containing a bank account and personal information are lost in the largest breach of security of its kind in Europe. Airports and train stations across the U.S. packed with travelers today. A record 39 million Americans expected to travel at least 50 miles over this Thanksgiving holiday. And the French government and striking transit workers went back to the bargaining table today. President Nicolas Sarkozy warning saboteurs of the country's high-speed rail system that they would be punished with extreme severity. Strike has crippled France and costing the economy an estimated 500 million euros daily. You're listening to QNN.
Living our lives in a civil fashion is a declaration of intent. It says we are ready to put our better selves forward for the well-being of the community. It's like romance. When you fall in love, you are on your best behavior. The delight in making a loving connection with someone brings out the best in us, naturally. It is natural to acknowledge our fellow human beings with a nod of the head or a smile, to show them the respect we would want them to show us. The more we are civil with strangers and with those who already know us, the healthier a spirit we create for ourselves, for each other, and the surrounding community. George Washington, the founder of a great nation, declared, "Every action done in company ought to be with some sign of respect to those that are present." Civility is essential to community health. For more information, click on the Civility button on our website, QualityNewsNetwork.com.
University researchers say they've mapped the genetic code for two strains of drug-resistant tuberculosis. Doctors say understanding the way mutations work will assist in the effort to improve treatment of the disease. According to the Calorie Control Council, on Thanksgiving Day, the average American eats 4,500 calories and nearly 230 grams of fat. The Centers for Disease Control, meantime, report that American adults are exercising more. However, there is still room for more improvement, according to that study. Freddie Mac announcing a massive quarterly net loss of $2.3 billion. Government-sponsored mortgage company saying it was forced to set aside $1.2 billion to pay for home loans gone awry. Shares of Office Depot fell 6% after it announced its quarterly profit fell by 9%. And also retailer Limited Brands blamed unseasonably warm autumn weather for poor sales, a 48% plunge in quarterly profit, the result there. Abercrombie and Fitch posting a 15% boost in quarterly profit. Even sales were fairly flat at comparable stores. Light sweet crude oil trading at $97.29 a barrel. Gold at $798.60 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow down 211 points to end below 13,000 at 12,799. And there's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 76 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Wednesday, November the 21st. If you are listening at shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern Time on a Wednesday, that is the 21st, you are indeed listening to a live show. This show is the eve of Thanksgiving. I was wondering about that earlier. You know, it's almost like science fiction. If you went to another planet and discovered a civilization that all ate the same animal on the same day and gave thanks, you'd probably think it was awfully strange. But, you know, it's a tradition. What can I tell you? I'm participating in it tomorrow myself, and I hope everyone has a safe and wonderful Thanksgiving Day tomorrow. The telephone number for the show is 877, the number 4, head-on. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It translates to 877-443-2366. This is indeed Conversation Radio, and you're welcome to call in and talk to myself and to the guest, who I'll be introducing in just a moment. If you have unlimited long distance, please use 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333. 3333, that rings in West Virginia, and it will save the studio over the toll-free line. If you have unlimited long distance, that would be great. If not, we'll certainly pay the freight. The email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I do try to check the mail during the show if any questions or our listener comments come along. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests, as well as to the audio archives from the past shows, and to the chat room, which is active as I speak. You'll find links there to the main Head On Radio Network site. You can find out about the progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network. You'll find the contribute button there. It's a PayPal button on the headonradionetwork.com main page. You'll find links also for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page, which will assist you in locating music for the show. Our guest this evening was actually our guest Monday evening. It's just that, and it's D.C. LaRue. I'm thrilled to have him back again. It's just that I talked to D.C. so much about his history and how he got in the music business and this, that, and the other, that really we only got to play one of his tracks while he was with us on the air, which was his track called Cathedrals. After he left the show, we played Forces of the Night and Indiscreet. And I'll tell you, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Just to remind you, if you were not with us Monday evening, and you're certainly welcome to go back and listen to the show from Monday, it's archived at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. You'll find a link to the archive within the calendar date, within Monday's calendar date. D.C. LaRue was born David Charles LaRue New Haven, Connecticut, and studied graphic design in college and then went into the album sleeve design business. He designed album sleeves for John Lennon, Bruce Springsteen, Janis Ian, a long list of folks. He saw that as a way of getting into the music industry through the back door because he's always wanted to be a singer. I think that's very clever. His album work and graphic designs won him 2 Paul Revere Awards. When D.C. LaRue did go into the music business in about 1976, his first smash was Cathedrals, and it prompted Cashbox magazine to say that Cathedrals is to disco what blue suede shoes is to rock dance halls, and there's a lot of history there. He's also the only 12-inch single to be charted on Billboard magazine's top 100 singles chart before or after. So without any further delay, D.C., welcome back to the show this evening.
Thank you. It's delightful to be back.
I'm glad to have you. Yes, I can hear you fine. And you can hear me too?
Sure.
Good.
You know, with the cell phones, they fade in and out. I'm just concerned that you'll hear everything I say.
Thanks
for having me back. I enjoyed the chat we had the night before last. It was really a delight, you know, because you asked some really nice questions and I had some good answers, I guess, you know. I'm really an honest person. At my age, I just cut right to the chase. You know, I had a friend of mine who was listening. He said, "Boy, you just go on and on. You're so honest." I said, "Well, you know, I have nothing to lose. If you ask me a question, I'll give you an answer." The most of the time, Peter, is that sometimes, well, not most of the time, but sometimes people don't want to hear the answer. They would prefer that I say something that isn't true or, you know, script the issue or say something that they want to hear, but I'm beyond that at this point in my life. I did that a lot when I was in the 70s when I was recording, you know, so I'm a little bit more liberated now.
Well, that's certainly a plus, actually, on this show. We like to deal with the realities, and we want everyone to feel comfortable and to talk about themselves. We're all pretty much flat out. It's like a family around here. We pretty much are very likely to say most anything about anything, and so I'm glad you feel the spirit of the show. D.C., before we jump right into the music, there are a couple of questions I sped you through toward the end of the show Monday that we really didn't go into any great depth, and that is about the movies. Now, you did soundtrack 2 songs for Thank God It's Friday. How did you get involved in the movie Thank God It's Friday? Because that was a huge hit.
Well, really simple. It was part of my deal with Casablanca. When the record company that I was recording for here in New York City, Pyramid Records, Pyramid Recording Company, they were an independent record company here in the city, but by the time my second album came out, The Tea Dance, they realized that they really couldn't handle, they were a real tiny label, and they didn't think they could handle my career, which seemed to be like mushrooming at the time. And so they wanted to keep their end of the production situation, but they didn't want to press and distribute records because they didn't feel they had the facility. So a deal was made between Pyramid Recording and Casablanca Records in the end of 1976, early 1977. And at the time, Casablanca was huge. I mean, it was the biggest independent record company in the world. It had Donna Summer, it had Kiss, it had, oh please, on and on, it had Cher, it was a giant, Village People, on and on. They just owned the charts, and their biggest foray in the music business was their disco business. And so when the deal was made for me to make that transition from Pyramid to Casablanca, it was right at that very moment that they were putting together the soundtrack for Thank God It's Friday. And I remember the guy who headed up Pyramid said, "Well, what, you know, you're going to be going over to Casablanca and you'll be leaving, blah, 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 blah." And I remember I got on the plane. I lived in New York City, and they had made arrangements for me to move to the West Coast and have a place there, whatever. And I arrived in Los Angeles. The night that I arrived, a limousine picked me up, and it took me to a party in Beverly Hills, and all the people from the movie and film division of Casablanca was there, and it was a party. The lawyers who were putting together the deal for Thank God It's Friday, you know, it's all lawyers, and it's, you know, I wonder how they ever get to make a movie in Hollywood. It's so much about everything else. But, you know, the people from Motown was there, and Diana Ross was there, and Donna Summer was there, and it was a thrill. I mean, it was really like a dream come true. I landed in Los Angeles, and the limousine picked me up and whisked me to a party in Beverly Hills. And Neil Bogart walked over to me, who was the president of Casablanca. And he greeted me, and he said, well, he said, you know, you're just in time. We're deciding on what's going on to the soundtrack. Do you want to write a couple of tunes? And I was supposed to begin the third album, with Bob Esty at the time, the Confessions recording. So that was postponed for a couple of months while I wrote the songs for Thank God It's Friday. And that's how it happened. It was just one thing led to another. It was very exciting. And I remember very well. And it really was. It was like a fantasy. It was just like this fantasy come true. I mean, all these stories that you've heard about Hollywood and movies and Beverly Hills and limousines, and it was all there, and it was all very real for me for the next 3 years while I was out in California with Casablanca. So that's how it happened. It was just part of, it just became a part of the transition from Pyramid to Casablanca.
Well, what were the tracks that you wrote for the movie, and also how did they explain to you the scenes that they would appear in? Did you have some prior knowledge?
It was real simple. One of the tracks was called Do You Want the Real Thing, and they had already shot the scene, and they had used Love to Love You Baby soundtrack there already. They had like at the time it was like a click track with a beat per minute kind of situation, when they finally decided on the actual song, they would then just drop that into the soundtrack. And so, they said, well, here's the scene. It's the scene of the disco. It's late, sleazy. The song we have in place now is What's the Love You Baby. So we'd like to have you do something with that BPM. And, so that's the approach that you have to take to that tune. And the other tune, they had already done the sequence of the guy and drag in the men's room, or in the ladies' room. I forget what, it's been a long time since I saw the movie, but there was one scene, I think it was a guy getting dragged to go out on the dance floor, and he was putting on his makeup and his girdle or something in the men's room. I don't know, I think it was the men's room. And they had to click that track, and they had the beats per minute, and they said, and here's this guy, part of this disco when he's getting into drag and he's going out and blah, blah, blah. And so I figured, you know, okay, no, I have to write something static. So I wrote, you can always tell a lady from the company she keeps, you know, and that was pretty much about, you can always tell a real woman from a drag by the things that she does during the night, if you listen to the lyric, you know. And, so those are how they came about. I was pretty much directed, you know, as to what they wanted me to do, how fast the tunes were supposed to be. And pretty much a lyrical concept. So just wasn't all freeform. I had a direction to go in.
Well, that's very interesting, actually, that they specified it down to the BPM. I guess the guys cutting the movie knew
exactly. Yeah, they did. Yeah, down to the BPM, sure.
And there was another flick. Go ahead.
Oh, I guess that they have these, you know, especially with that film, so music oriented. That's the way they did it, you know, just the way they did it. And you're going to ask about Sergeant Pepper. Sergeant Pepper was one of those things. They just got every big name in Hollywood to make an appearance throughout the film. And I mentioned the other night that, you know, these weren't the speaking roles or anything. They were just, you know, cameos, or, you know, on screen, off screen. Just so they could add another name to the credits, the roles, the credits.
You didn't sing. I was trying to figure out.
I remember when I said I was in Sergeant Pepper, my mom went to see the movie. She said, I didn't get to see you. I said, oh, yes, I was there. My name's on the credits. I'm there at the very end of the crowd scene. I'm right there next to Carol Channing and Frankie Valli. So it was that kind of thing. And the same thing with Can't Stop the Music. Alan Carr, who was the producer, was a big fan of mine, and although I didn't have a speaking part in the film or anything, he really loved my music, and I didn't know that, you know, at the time I didn't know it. And the film was put together. And then my friend Felipe Rose from Village People. I'm still friendly with a couple of people from Village People, Felipe and Randy Jones, the original Village People, the cowboy, lives around the corner from me here in the city. So, and we're still in touch. And I remember Felipe said to me, I didn't know, you know, Alan Carr was such a big DC the Roof fan because he wants to put you in the scene when The Office, the Neil Bogart character and the various, but it wasn't anything super, a cameo, you know, it's something to add to my resume. I was really just out there to make music. It sounds glamorous, but it was real, just, you know, cut and dried.
Well, one thing I neglected to ask you Monday, and she's one of my favorite people, Sharon, how many times have you been loved before, Red? Apparently, you've worked with her. I'd love to hear your impressions of Sharon, Sharon Red, and some of the. Do you have any stories about her? She is remarkable.
Well, she was a tremendously talented lady. I don't know how many people are fans of hers. I mean, it's a shame. She was one of the original harlots with Bette Midler. Her was in Manchester, and Barry Manilow played the piano. And I remember going to see Bette Midler out in the Oh, Paramus in the early 70s, Paramus, New Jersey. And I met I was there with a friend of mine, Peter Silberman, who had booked her. He was the booking guy for the Continental Baths, with Steve Ostrow, who owned the Continental Baths. And, you know, that was Beth's big break, quote-unquote, when she sang at the Continental Baths. And Peter Silberman and his wife told me, you got to hear this woman, Bette Midler. And I said, okay, so we hopped into his convertible, and we drove out to Paramus, New Jersey. And she sang in the theater. She was like a shopping mall theater, you know, where they played the movies. She had two shows that evening, and it was on a weekend. And I'll tell you something, I can remember the moment like it was yesterday. Bette Midler was just, she sang Delta Dawn, and it was like a three-piece combo, and the harlots and her. It just knocked me out. I would say she still is. I mean, she was just incredible. I mean, that woman in person, I'll tell you, nothing's like her. And then we went backstage with Peter, and I met Barry Manilow, and I met Sharon Red, and we became kind of friendly. And then when the time came to do the recording, Sharon Red was also friendly with Annie Sutton, who was Aaron Sheffrem's girlfriend, and he got Annie to do the background vocals. And then Annie called Sharon. Of course, Sharon and I had known each other. And so she was on the recording, and then shortly thereafter, and it's interesting, these people, they weren't disco, and they weren't really thinking about becoming disco singers and this and that, but disco got so big, and Sharon got to work so much from being on my recording, you know, she got hired so much that she ultimately got to deal with Prelude, and then she started making dance records herself. And, you know, she's passed away, it's been a while now, you know, and she left us, but real talented woman. And, you know, we lost a lot of people. I mean, another one that I really adored, and she was the sweetest girl in town, was Vicki Sue Robinson. And I was so heartbroken when she passed. I mean, oh, boy. She used to appear at one of the cabarets here in the Village. And every time she was there, we'd get together. We had the best time. When I would perform, I remember I did a show with Vicki Sue and Savannah Band and whatever down in Atlanta, Georgia. Ah, she was a delight. She was the best. She was such fun.
Remember for our listeners some of the tracks that Vicki Sue did. Now, she did the, if I'm not mistaken, the remake of To Sir With Love, and also, what was
Turn
the
you,
other
Turn
big?
Turn the Beat Around.
Yes, that.
Turn
and,
the Beat Around and Hold Tight. She had a couple of big hits, yeah.
Did she do Everlasting Love also, I think?
I don't remember. She may have done it later in her career, but that wasn't, you know, her first big hit was Hold Tight, and then the smasher Rudy, which everybody loves and is familiar with, was Turn the Beat Around, you know. And she had a couple of big hits, you know. But so that's Sharon Red. You're a Sharon Red fan, huh? You have a lot of her stuff? You have her recordings?
Yes, used to play Sharon Red regularly back when I was DJing in the 80s. She was always one of my favorites, absolutely. And In the Name of Love, of course, was a wonderful track, too.
Big hit.
Remarkable. Well, I'm not going to keep you talking about these any longer. I do want to get into music. I realize you can stay with us about an hour for the first half of the show this evening. I'm noticing some of the music that you sent along.
I was disappointed, you know, just before we continue. I thought that I was hoping that I would get some email from the listeners. I mean, I thought I would go to my email the next day from my website and see a whole bunch of the people out there listening, emailing me and telling me how they like the show. So I just want to say before I have to end the interview, to all those people listening up there, go to my website and send me an email and tell me what you think of the music and tell me what you think of the interview. I would like to know whether a lot of listeners know who I am or whether they're just getting an introduction to my music as we speak and you're playing it now, whether I'm picking up a new audience or whether there are people out there from the 70s who are listening who are, you know, a frenzy of remembering kind of thing from back in the day. And, you know, the email address is there on the website. It's dclarue@dclarue.org, or you can just go to the website, www.dclarue.org. But I would really appreciate hearing from people who are out there listening because it means a great deal for me. I like to go into the email in the morning and look at the mail and see how people are reacting to my music and my career and the website and whatever. So I'd appreciate from any people out there listening, I'd appreciate an email contact. You know, reach out. It would be really nice.
Well, I encourage them to do that also. You are a remarkable person with such a history. It just makes sense to me. And that's D.C. LaRue D.C. It's www.dclarue.org to get to the site. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And also you can find
the right there.
Yeah, and you can find that also at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. You'll just go to today's calendar date if you can locate it by going through Strictly Confidential, also dclarue.org, and you can locate the email address. Some of the music that you have sent, D.C., is not dated in the 1970s, and it's not dated in the 80s. In fact, it's dated in the 2000s. What's up with this new stuff that I've gotten from you? Edge of the Night is one track that comes to mind.
Well, when I stopped recording in the early 80s, I had really decided that I was not going to be recording anymore. I mean, I really had it. And I felt I had done the best I could. I had a five-year role. I had five albums. I had a lot of success. And the way the music industry had changed, I mean, it was so anti-disco. And, you know, they were burning disco records tonight. And I really felt abused, and I really felt very bad for myself. I'm very sorry for myself because I had really done, I really felt I had made some, at the time, and I don't feel this way anymore. I have to say I've changed because things have changed. But I felt really bad, and I felt that I didn't get the credit I deserved, and I had worked very hard, and I had given it everything I had. And to be treated like such garbage in 1982, I mean, I'll tell you something. I felt really abused. And I had decided, forget it. I said, I'm going to go back to art direction, design, and photography, and I'm not going to bother with the music industry or disco or recording ever again. And I kept my promise until the early 90s, about 2000. I met this kid, Adam Goldstone, who was a DJ here in New York City. And I'm kind of a kid in his early 30s, and he was such a fan. I mean, I'll tell you something. And I was doing art direction. I was doing all the advertising, in-store display work, and stuff, promotional stuff for HMV record stores here in New York City. And I met Adam at the record store that he worked in on 86th Street and Lexington Avenue here, and he just was, I mean, he was so excited about working with me and meeting me, and he got a deal with a record company in England called Musonic, and he approached me. He had my cell phone number, and he approached me. He said, "Listen," he said, "I want to record you so much." He said, "Will you please do a record for me?" And you know, he was such a sweet kid, and he was so excited, and he was such a fan, you know, and he really loved my music so much that I couldn't say no to him. So we did Edge of the Night. I think it was 2002 or whatever. I'd have to look at the record, but it was early this decade. And I'll tell you something. I'm not sorry I did it. I mean, he passed away. I mean, these guys, you know, he passed away about a year and a half ago at a trance marathon weekend out in the Midwest somewhere, and he had done too many drugs, and he passed out in the shower, and he collapsed, and he cut his something gross and something awful, an ugly thing. But yeah. He made the best record with me, and I listened to him. He gave me direction. I wrote the song with him. And Edge of the Night is the outcome. And it was a really great recording. And as luck would have it, and this is the shame, because what happened is that, as luck would have it, when his album came out, which was called Lower East Side Stories, and it was released in London, in England, in the UK, and it was only out for 2 or 3 months, and the record company went out of business. And then, shortly thereafter, Adam passed away, a dreadful accident. And so the track is just sat there doing nothing. But I really loved it, and I'm not sorry I did it, and I'm glad he approached me to do it. And I, when I listen to it now, I'm really, I get excited about it because it came out really nice. And bottom line is that for anybody who's interested in my music and any kind of musical evolution I have, may have, gone through, to bring myself up to date into the year 2001 or whatever, that's a good track to listen to because it's pretty much, I'm still very honest with the lyrics. I cut through the crap. You know, it's very little bullshit, and it's a very serious story about, you know, like sexuality and relationships, and I really love it. I'm very proud of it. And so that's how it
wonderful.
Happened. You know, I would never make another record. I made another record, but it wasn't a comeback record because I'm not trying to stage a comeback. But it was a favor for a friend that turned out very, very well.
Well, I have to say that, quite frankly, between Glenn Rivera and myself, we're hoping you do make a comeback, to be perfectly honest with you.
I had an offer recently to perform again and to do some England and London and Paris and Tokyo, and I'm considering it for the spring. I have to be honest. And there's another, I haven't performed in 15 or 20 years. But, you know, I don't know, with this website, there's a whole change in attitude about disco music from the 70s. And it's got a new effect, and it's getting a new interest. And like I said the other night, that lots of the people who come into my website are kids. You know, they're in their early 20s, and which I was very surprised at. So, and I guess I would consider performing again. But I come back, no, I thought my whole... my whole focus is changed. I'm a photographer now, and I do photography, and I love it, and I don't have a problem with it. And on occasion, I would do performance or something. I really, but honestly, Peter, I don't plan on making another record. I don't. I don't think I
well,
need
not...
to. I think I pretty much said it all, you know?
I see. Well, nonetheless, we would like to run Edge of the Night, and thank you for introducing it for us. Is it all right if we run that now, DC?
Sure, you can play.
I'd love to hear it. Bob, if you'd run the DC LaRue track, Edge of the Night.
motion doesn't mean the need for more. Hope there's something somewhere that can fill the empty space. Answer to the question of what I've been looking for. In the far rooms, in the dance halls, in the diners, high in the street.
Standing on the edge of the night, standing on the edge of the night.
Well, DC, I really like the track. It reminds me of Cathedrals in a lot of ways. Were you influenced?
Adam, I didn't really want to go there, but Adam insisted, and so I went along with him. He wanted something dark and moody and sinister and whatever, and I said, okay. He wanted it very much like Cathedrals, because, I mean, he just thought Cathedrals was the best, and he wanted to evoke the same kind of mood, the same kind of feeling, the same kind of reality. Kind of sexuality, and so that's what we did. I mean, it was intentional. So you picked up the right vibe.
it's a very good track, and I can see where he would want you to do an updated version, or an up to something with that same theme or that darkness, because Cathedrals was, of course, a major hit, as everyone knows. Is this available, this particular track, available at the D.C. LaRue store?
Yes, it's available at the D.C. LaRue store. It's on a compilation there. It's called Wicked Youth. It's on one of the compilations. I think that's probably, maybe there's some, maybe you can buy the CD as an import online if you want to hear the whole Adam Goldstone CD. You can do a search on Google for Adam Goldstone, GOLDSTONE, and the album is called Lower East Side Stories. But if you just want that track, you can pick it up by going to the DC LaRue store at my website, and you can buy the compilation CD there, the Wicked Youth CD. And that Wicked Youth CD also has a couple of other unreleased tracks. It's got a duet that I do with Lou Christie that was never released, and it has a ballad that I did with the Harlem Boys Choir that was never released. So it's a pretty decent CD collection.
And that's at that particular, you can click within www.dclarue.org to find that, right?
Yeah, and then you just click on the store. There's a link right from the website to the store, the DC LaRue store. So, takes a minute.
Well, you mentioned the Harlem Choir, and in my reading, I've associated that with the track "Good Morning, My Love," which I listened to the other day, and I think it's beautiful. This was not released except for the CD.
Yeah, well, when I was with Casablanca, everything I did was released except two tracks, and one of them was called "Love Is an Emotion." And the other one was called "Good Morning, My Love." The stuff that was recorded independently, separately, and we never got—it was never released. One thing led to another, and we never got it released. But there were two tracks, and "Good Morning, My Love" happens to be one of my favorite all-time records that I ever made in my life. I mean, it's a ballad, and it's not typical of something that I was famous for at the time. But it's such an honest song about getting up in the morning across from somebody that you're really in love with. And once again, it's a real deal lyric. I mean, it's just an honest, honest lyric. And I think it really is. Says a lot about a real honest relationship and a valid loving relationship. And you know, if you love somebody in the morning, you really love them, you know, when they're jumping out of bed and they've got bad breath and their hair is a mess. And this is about that, you know, and it's about sharing that moment. And and then as an afterthought, we added the Boys Choir of Harlem because a friend of mine knew the choir director at the time, and who I think has passed away, Russell Turnbull. And he said to me, he said, I bet you I could get the Boys Choir of Ireland to do the background vocals for a donation. And I said, well, you want to try? You can try. And he made a big donation to the Boys Choir of Harlem, and we got a bus, and we bused them into the studio, and they did, these little boys did the background vocals. And it's just as pretty as can be. They sound like angels. And I really love that track, and that's really unavailable. Except for the CD, the Wicked Youth CD, which is available on the website. But I love it, and that's one of the I don't play my own music, but when I do play something that I've done myself, for whatever reason, I seem to play that one, and I throw that one on and play it.
Wonderful. Well, I'm sure everyone would love to hear it, and I'd love to hear it again. And in fact, you are right, D.C. It is a wonderful track. Bob, if you'd roll the D.C. LaRue track, Good Morning, My Love. That is marvelous, and the choir just gives it such a flair.
Oh,
it's really
you
wonderful.
Know, I hate to say it. I mean, I was sitting here listening to it, and I said, boy, that's such a good record. It's such a shame it never got released, huh?
Well, yes, I agree. I agree with you that it's unfortunately, it is available on Wicked Youth there at www.dclarue.org, and it occurred to me that we ought to explain that D.C. LaRue is spelled...
I don't want to talk to you, but, you know, I love the song so much. So I often think of maybe trying to get Barry Manilow or Whitney Houston to record it, because I think the song, even though it was never a hit for me, I think the song is such a real deal song, you know? I just, you know, it's like one of those things where I listen to it and I say, well, I wouldn't change a thing. No, not, I wouldn't change, it's like the Tea Dance I mentioned the other night. That's my favorite recording because from beginning to end, it's exactly how I envisioned it. And I wouldn't change a note. And, same thing with Good Morning, My Love. From the beginning of that record to the end of the record, I wouldn't change one thing. You know, it's just flawless. And it's not because it's mine. It's because all the people, you know, you go in to make a record, and it's not just you. It's all on that recording. It's all real musicians, and it's all the boys choir singing, and it's the engineer, and it's the guitar player, and it's all those things, you know. And when I say it's a perfect record and I really love it, it's an appreciation of all the effort by all the other people, all that effort that went into making that record, the record that I perceived it to be, and having it work out just perfectly well, you know. And in the scheme of things, that doesn't really happen very often, I don't think. And I think if you speak with any performer or recording artist or whatever, I mean, I think the best of them can say, you know, in their entire recording careers that there's only been a few recordings that, you know, have evolved and been, you know, ended up exactly the way they perceived they were going to be. I mean, you know, it's an imperfect world and you don't always get what you want.
Well, it was an inspired idea to have the choir, and I was going to point out that I think if some of the listeners don't know, we should spell that D.C. LaRue is D-C-L-A-R-U-E, so it's www.dclarue.org. D.C., it's 9:50, and I promised I wouldn't keep you past the top of the hour, so maybe if you'd like to introduce another track, we'll go ahead and run that and then go to the news after it completes. But honestly, I don't know which one to pick. I'm torn between so many. I think you better do it. Do you happen to have the track list in front of
you? What do you got there to use?
We have not heard Faces of Love, nor have we heard Let Them Dance, nor Do You Want the Real Thing, Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, The Hot Jungle Drums and Voodoo Rhythms.
I would suggest saying Let Them Dance only because, as I mentioned to you the other night, that seems to be the record that's getting all the play on satellite radio, on internet radio. If you go and if you key in Let Them Dance, D.C. LaRue on Google, you come up with all these playlists on all these disco internet stations, and they're playing it on Sirius satellite radio, and they're playing it on KTU here in New York City. And as much as Cathedrals was the first big hit and established me, I mentioned this the other night, I think Let Them Dance is more palatable, and it's more of an obvious disco dance record that reflects the era. And it seems to be of all my past recordings, it seems to be the one that's getting all the airplay. That one and Hot Jungle Drums and Voodoo Rhythm, which was another hit that I had in the 70s. But Hot Jungle Drums gets a lot of play too. Sometimes it kind of amazes me. But Let Them Dance is the winner, so I think if you wanted to go out with something, I would go out with Let Them Dance.
Well, then we'll definitely do that. And it is interesting that even though many people dare not say the word disco, it is seeming, I see a resurgence of it. Every time I turn around, I'm finding it
Peter,
being played
it's all,
somewhere.
It's all changed. And that's why I said I'm not upset or resentful anymore, and I don't feel that way anymore because I have lived to see the day 35 years later that the whole disco thing has come around where it's getting respect, it's getting, not just me, it's the whole genre that's getting the kind of recognition it deserves and for the contributions that it made to the music industry. Disco music and the electronic things and the studio stuff and the synthesizer stuff and the inroads and the innovations that disco music made in the recording studio, relative to recording techniques and synthesizers and digital recording and the whole thing, changed the entire music industry from country music to classical music. And for years and years, and without disco, I don't want to go on and on because you want to play that record, but without disco, there would be no hip-hop and there would be no rap. End of story. It's the end of that. It would never have evolved into the dance. Without dance music, without disco music, the evolution musically would have never occurred. There would never be rap music or hip hop music without disco. Period. End of story. There's no argument. And for years, even with rap being so big, disco never got the credit that it got deserved. But now it's different. And for some reason, it's happened in the last two or three or four years. And I see it and I feel it. And so I've lived to see, like I said, I've lived to see the day, 35 years later, that the whole vibe, the whole attitude, the feeling about disco has changed, and it's just come 360, and now it's as positive as can be. And I can't tell you how delighted I am, because, I mean, I feel vindicated. It's like, be there, I've lived to see it, and I told you so. So I'm real happy. And you're right.
Good for you, DC. You
right,
tell them.
By saying that. It's all changed.
I think it's wonderful. And DC, we're going to run the track next, and then we'll go to the news at when the track completes. And DC, I appreciate your spending so much time with us on the show, And you are welcome to return as a guest in the future anytime you have just want to pick up the phone and call the show. I'll put you right on. You don't have to have a special invitation. And we've really enjoyed having you here.
Well, it's been terrific. It's been a lot of fun, Peter, because I haven't done any. There's one interview that I did about 2 months ago, but it was my first interview in like 20 years. And this is my second interview. And I agreed to do another interview with a online. It's called Disco Style, www.discostyle.com, DISCOSTYLE. And I've agreed to do an interview with them. But see, once again, it's like these interviews are, the people are calling me up and wanting to talk to me about disco. And I think it's solely because it's not me or so much a re-interest in my music, but it's a re-interest in the genre. And the people who are still around and cognizant, and not brain dead, you know, to talk about it and to give some insight into what it was and how it evolved. And I think I'm delighted. So you're my second interview in 20 years, but I'm planning on doing a third one. And then I'll see what happens, you know?
Well, it could be the start of a comeback, DZ. I hate to tell you, you've sworn not to do it, but it sounds like three interviews in a row is the start of a comeback to me.
Well, it's not a comeback. It's just a re-interest. No, I'm just having fun with it. But it's not. Believe me, it's not a comeback. I'm going to make any new recordings. And maybe I'll perform, you know, at a club or two just to have a good time for people who would like to see me and want to drag me out, you know, shake my bones, but you know, but that's about it. I don't envision myself at my age doing any new recordings or saying anything new or staging any kind of spectacular comeback. It's like I said, I'm a photographer and I love my work and I love being a photographer and I have a wonderful time doing it. It's very creatively fulfilling and very gratifying, and so that's about that. So, but
well,
thank you so
again.
Much for inviting me to talk with you. I mean, I've had a great time. I can't
thank you. I've enjoyed myself thoroughly. You're a remarkable guest, and have a great Thanksgiving tomorrow, DC.
Well, I sure would wish the same to you and all the listeners out there. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday and a wonderful holiday season, Christmas and New Year's and Hanukkah and whatever, okay?
And thank you. And everyone, drop him an email. It's DC LaRue at
DC
LaRue.
Yeah, let me hear from you guys. Let me know you're alive. Let me know that I'm talking to somebody when I do these interviews, okay?
Absolutely. They're out there.
I promise to answer every email personally. You know, it may take me a couple of days, but I'll get to it and I'll reply. I'll sit down on the computer and do it myself.
Wonderful. That's DC LaRue at dclarue.org. And thank you again, DC, and good evening to you, sir. And amazing guest. He was referred to us, DC was referred to us through our friend Glenn Rivera. I tell you, between Glenn Rivera and our friend Ernest Cole, who referred the guest last evening, who was Stan Harrison, we're really seeing a remarkable side and unheard of side of the music business that we just don't know about. So what we'll do is we'll run the track that we just talked about, which is the DC LaRue track, Let Them Dance, which is apparently being played on Sirius, and we certainly can't let Sirius outdo us. We're going to run Let Them Dance, and then when we come back, I'll say a couple of words and we'll go to the news. Thank you, Bob. And that was the track, Let Them Dance, from D.C. LaRue. I received a couple of emails there during the while the track was playing. One is from one of our black listeners who is asking about D.C.'s comments regarding disco being the start of rap. I can explain to you the reference that was being, what he's talking about there. When he released the track called Indiscreet, it was a 12-inch, I think it was 1976. Yes, it was 1976. Rapper Grandmaster Flash, who is an old-school rapper, you can see his videos on YouTube, it's Grandmaster Flash, was quoted as saying, it was the first hip-hop break I'd ever heard and the start of hip-hop and rap beats to come. So I think that's what DC was referring to, just so that I can explain that. And then there's another email complaining that my interviews are too long. Look, they're not going to get any shorter. whatever. Okay, let me tell you about my guests this coming week before we go to the news. Monday, we have a remarkable guest, Bishop John Spong. And he is a progressive theologian and a remarkable Bible scholar and a prolific author. He's the author of the book, Why Christianity Must Change or Die. I'm very much looking forward to talking to the bishop. This coming Tuesday, after the holidays, we'll have Dan Gonzalez. Now, Dan is an ex-gay survivor. He went through hell, and he's done several critiques of some studies, and we're looking forward to having Dan with us. Wednesday night is free, and Thursday night, we'll have Steve Skinner along with Ernest Cole, who are both legends in the music business, and looking forward to talking to them. And then, very special, next week on Friday, we have Gus and Elmer. Now, Gus and Elmer have been together 62 years. They are very likely the longest, the gay couple that's been together longer than any other living couple in the world. I believe one is in his early 90s and the other late 80s, or they may both be in their 90s now. They live in their home, and they take care of each other. They're doing well, and I'm thrilled to have Gus and Elmer on the show. They go back all the way back to the war. They met as soldiers, and it's a remarkable story and rich with LGBT history, and I know you'll want to join us for that. And yeah, that's all I need to say before. And so as we come up on the news, this is Strictly Confidential. My name is Peter Godbold, and you're listening to the Head On Radio Network. You're not the first to try.
This is the Quality News Network. The war in Afghanistan has reached crisis proportions as the Taliban gain in numbers in more than half the country, closing in on the capital city of Kabul. An independent think tank whose members live in country completed a new study. Results indicate that if NATO is to have any impact against an insurgency, troop numbers will have to be doubled to at least 80,000. Ending months of speculation, officials with the state of New Hampshire announcing that their presidential primary will be held on January 8th. Iowa's caucuses have led the way for several decades, but New Hampshire has had the initial primary for even longer, since 1920. The announcement comes directly after the state of Michigan's decision to hold their primary on January 15th. The 2008 Democratic presidential race is tightening, Barack Obama gaining on frontrunner Hillary Clinton 6 weeks before the first balloting. That's according to a Reuters Zogby poll released today. Airports and train stations across the U.S. were packed with travelers today. A record 39 million Americans were expected to travel at least 50 miles this Thanksgiving holiday. Thousands of displaced Iraqis have begun returning to their homes, according to the BBC. An estimated 1,000 Iraqis make it back home daily because of a drop in violence, improved security, and incentives from the Iraqi government. In Islamabad, Pakistan, sports hero Imran Khan and hundreds more political prisoners freed today as martial law eased throughout the country's capital city. President General Pervez Musharraf may leave his military post as soon as this weekend. That's according to a top official under pressure from President Bush. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown apologized to the public today for a security breach affecting an estimated 25 million people across the UK. Two computer disks lost in the largest breach of security of its kind in Europe. Disgraced American cyclist Floyd Landis making a final appeal to French arbitrators to clear his name, possibly to regain the 2006 Tour de France title. He's accused of testing positive for testosterone during last year's race. Landis is banned from the sport for 2 years and stripped of his title. You are listening to the Quality News Network. We'll take a look at science and business news just ahead, but first, this message.
I know your secret. Nobody told me, but I know. Every time your little girl wants you to read her a story and you tell her you're too busy, I know. When your boy needs help with homework and you tell him to ask his mother, I know. Your wife asks you whether the warranty is still good on the broken dishwasher and you tell her you're too tired to look for it, I know. You're very good at keeping the secret, but it does take a lot of effort to keep the charade going. It could be very scary and embarrassing if anyone found out. But I know your secret. You can't read. Neither can 93 million American adults. You're in big company. Instead of running scared, become a hero in your own family. Find a local literacy program at your library. It's free. The day you whisper in your wife's ear, "Honey, I can read," just watch how big her smile is.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
Using rapid bursts of magnetic energy is an effective treatment for serious depression. That's according to a large-scale study. It is considered safe and a viable alternative to both electroshock therapy and antidepressant drugs. Japan's prime minister unveiling a $2 billion aid package to assist developing Asian nations to fight pollution and combat climate change. The initiative includes grants, soft loans, and training programs over 5 years to tackle global warming and foster economic development. Freddie Mac announcing a massive quarterly net loss of $2.3 billion. The mortgage company says it was forced to set aside $1.2 billion to pay for home loans that went bad. Retailer Limited Brands are blaming unseasonably warm autumn weather for poor sales and a 48% plunge in quarterly profit. The Ohio-based company lowered its financial outlook as well. Abercrombie & Fitch posting a 15% boost in quarterly profit, even though sales were fairly flat at comparable stores. Light sweet crude oil trading at $97.29 a barrel. Gold at $798.60 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average down, plunging 211 points to end at 12,799. NASDAQ down 34 points. S&P 500 off 23. More at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
And he's back, riding across America on a horse named Strictly Confidential, a man who knows his way around a pair of chaps. Here's your host, Peter Godbold.
And we're back for the second hour of Strictly Confidential on the Head On Radio Network. I am Peter Godbold. That's my story, and I am sticking to it. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4 Head On. That's 877, the number 4 Head On. Or if you have unlimited long distance, you could use that and save the studio some money. That's 304-658-3333. That rings in West Virginia. Mail arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. We are indeed in Turkey Eve this evening. Tomorrow we will be some tired puppies by tomorrow afternoon. Some of our listeners are postponing Thanksgiving till Friday, some till Saturday because of late guest arrivals. So the ones of us who are doing it tomorrow will most likely be eating turkey soup by the time they get to their main dish. But I hope everyone has a safe and happy time with their families and their friends, and to give thanks for what's left of this country anyway, the pieces that have not been destroyed. And oh, how I want that man impeached. It's just more than I can take some days. You know, there was a article, and it was sent to me last evening by our news ninja, Gene, and I very much appreciated it. And in fact, Bob mentioned it to me this evening in production chat as being a great story. And of course, I didn't get to it, but last night we had our guest Stan with the wonderful music program from last evening. But you gotta love this. You just gotta love it. Most of you, anyway, have heard of Conservapedia. It is the lame hope to establish their worldview of everything's bad except what we think view of the conservatives versus Wikipedia. And of course, Wikipedia is way too liberal and too open. Too many professors contributing to it. Too many people of like minds sharing the truth. Now, of course, not all of Wikipedia is absolutely accurate. It's a work in progress, and it always will be, which is the beautiful thing about it. But much to my horror, someone told me about Conservapedia a while back. If you'd like to visit the site, you're welcome to that. But it's at conservapedia.com. And in any case, this is the story of Conservapedia. You're going to love this. There are 45,000, slightly over 45,000 total pages in the Conservapedia database. Now, that's generous because that includes the talk pages. Now, talk pages are just pages about Conservapedia. They're not pages regarding any subject other than the inner workings of Conservapedia. That 45,000 also represents what they call minimal stub pages, which are just pages with a couple of links on it, are coming soon, and other pages that don't really qualify as content. So out of the 45,000 total pages, there are actually 19,000, I'm rounding these off, pages that have, quote, legitimate content. Now, regarding files, is about 6,000 files that have been uploaded that you can download. Now, the thing about it is that there's been a total of 37 million page views for Conservapedia. I'm rounding it off. And then there's a listing for page edits, which is kind of irrelevant. And but here's what blew me away. Gene just blew me away with this. And by the way, Bob pointed out in chat that this is being covered on the homepage also of WD-40. this is what they're interested in. I'm about to tell you what, you're not going to believe this. I'm about to tell you what the top 10 pages are in Conservapedia. These conservatives are interested in one thing and one thing only. Just amazes me. The number one page is, of course, the main page. You type in Conservapedia, it takes you to the home page of Conservapedia. So obviously that will always remain the number one page as being the opening page. Almost 2 million views of that. Okay. Now for actual content, okay, the number two site, homosexuality within Conservapedia. The next site, number three in popularity, homosexuality and hepatitis. The fourth track in Conservapedia, or rather the fourth article or page that has the most hits, is homosexuality and promiscuity. The fifth most observed page in the Conservapedia is, and this stumped me, gay bowel syndrome. Now, that's a new one on me. I don't really think I care to know much about it, if there is any such thing. But I'm sure they've got some conservative doctors who have, I know about irritable bowel and bitchy bowel. Maybe they mean bitchy. Okay, fifth most popular page within Conservapedia, gay bowel syndrome. The sixth most popular page in Conservapedia would be homosexuality and parasites. I'm as serious as a heart attack. The seventh most popular page, homosexual couples and domestic violence. Are you picking up a trend here, my friend? The eighth most popular page, homosexuality and gonorrhea. The ninth most popular page in Conservapedia, Homosexuality and Mental Health. And at number 10, now this is just number 10 for today. Yesterday, number 10 was Homosexuality and Mental Health, which has moved up to number 9 today, and a couple of other movements in the chart. But there's no difference in the content. You know, each one is exactly the same topic, just a couple have moved. Today's number 1, our number 10 hit in Conservapedia, The Homosexual Agenda. So what you have out there, my friends, is this really defines the war, does it not? We are the most despised people on the planet, and they are desperately, desperately trying to justify their prejudice. Homosexuality and hepatitis, promiscuity of homosexuals, gay bowel syndrome, homosexuality and parasites, homosexual couples and domestic violence, any topic they can find to boost their ignorance. Homosexuality and gonorrhea, homosexuality and mental health, homosexual agenda. Well, of course, when I saw the homosexual agenda, I was immediately completely enthralled. I mean, I have been begging for a copy of the homosexual agenda. Somehow, the head homosexuals have misplaced my email address, and I just don't. I seem to have fallen off the homosexual agenda list, but I have it for you now. I can now tell you what the homosexual agenda is, and it's quite simple. It's 6 points. And the homosexual agenda has been taken from Focus on the Family. And these are the 6 points. You're about to hear the homosexual agenda for the first time. 1, talk about gays and gayness as loudly and as often as possible. The chat room is telling me that there really should be a category of homosexuality in prickly heat. Love it. Thank you. The second point of the homosexual agenda is portray gays as victims, not as aggressive challengers. Challengers. Okay, number 3, give homosexual protectors a just cause. 4, make gays look good. 5, make the victimizers look bad. Now, this is interesting. Make the victimizers look bad. You know, there's almost a little core of truth in there. They're actually referring to themselves as the victimizers. You know, it seems to be, well, there's no sense in wandering down that path. We'll all go insane trying to figure out anything written by Focus on the Family. And, of course, number 6, get funds from corporate America. Interesting. I thought that we were all rich and had all the funds and didn't need corporate America, but I'm sure this has to do with, you know, the corporate, like Ford donating to the homosexual agenda. And Microsoft, you recall our story that we did about, what was his name, Henderson a few weeks ago, who challenging Microsoft. By the way, I have another article buried in here somewhere about that guy. He was one of the people who went to Latvia and spoke at the huge anti-gay rally over there, saying that he represented the United States of America and that he represented the White House. So anyway, I just needed you to know the Conservapedia statistics. It changes every day. I doubt the topics change every day. I seriously doubt it. I'm looking at 2 days worth of, and every single line item is, just go to conservapedia.com. I think it's .com. Maybe it's .org. Who knows? And in the left-hand column, you'll see the word statistics, and you just click on it, and it will take you directly to the most viewed pages. That's correct. The most viewed pages by the 15,000 registered users. Of course, anyone can look, so I guess registered users can change or edit. So this is what they're interested in. They are desperately interested in homosexuality and anything they can use to beat us up with. And, of course, these articles, I haven't the heart to read them. It's a time of celebration. I really just can't be bothered with reading them. But you can just guess that it's based on maybe the Dutch study or any number of gussied up reports from the medical industry. So I just wanted you to know they're not looking up Holy Spirit. They're not looking up evolution. They're not looking up brotherly love. They're not looking up communion. They're not looking up mass healings. They're not even looking up Jesus or God. They're looking up homosexuality all the way down the line, with the exception of the number one page, which is, of course, the main page. And Bob is pointing out in production that they're not looking up family values either. I completely agree. Anyway, thank you for that story, Gene. That was an amazing story. And thank you, Bob, for reminding me that of that in production this evening. I just want you to know it's their own statistics. You know, if I were the Conservapedia, I would fudge that. I would go in there and manually edit that out so it at least would have the pretension of people that have something else in their mind than, you know, the holy penis. You know, I guess they call those three things down there the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. Maybe so, because it's the holy penis. Oh, Lord have mercy. And Obama did something today that was, well, he might have done it yesterday, I don't have the date on it, but he spoke words on the 700 Club, which had probably never been heard before. Of course, he did it in the tone of not an outraged gay man or outraged lesbian. He did it in the tone of a politician trying to, cross bridges. In any case, though, he was at the 700 Club on November the 9th, and there was a video exchange. They asked him about the getting the echo. It'll go away in a second, and I can listen. They asked him about the special rights. Here we go, special rights for LGBT folks. Of course, this is the way they always frame it. They had probably just come back from reading an article on Conservapedia. In any case, Obama was asked about special rights and how he felt about special rights for LGBT folks, and this is how he answered it.
On the issue of gay marriage, my belief is that as a public official, my role is to make sure that everybody is treated fairly and everybody has equal rights. I know that sometimes in this debate there's talk about, we don't mind giving gay and lesbians equal rights but not special rights. The fact is that right now many gay couples, for example, can't visit each other in the hospital. And when I, sit down and read scripture and I think, how would Jesus feel about somebody not being able to visit somebody they love when they're sick? I conclude that that is something that is important. And certainly as a public official, it's important for me to make sure that those basic rights, that basic equality is available. On these issues, I think we can disagree respectfully, disagree without being disagreeable, but we have to remind ourselves of all the things we agree on, which is that children should be cared for, that we should be promoting the safety and security of the United States, that we want to give economic opportunity to all people. My hope is, I understand there are going to be some people who can't vote for me because of a couple of these positions. I just want them to know that these are issues that I don't take lightly, and I respect their position.
I don't think words like that have ever been spoken in the 700 Club. I think there are still little old ladies looking on the floor for where their teeth fell out, and the little old men, too. I'm sure there are people who are clutching their cardiac resuscitators and grabbing their oxygen tanks. Never before has it been pointed out on the 700 Club that we have any difficulty whatsoever in making any medical decisions or even visiting loved ones in the hospital. And, he did an excellent job with that. He was a politician. He went on to say, I understand that, and that you might not be able to vote for me. Of course, I would have been much harsher, but then I'm not running for anything. What can I tell you? So Obama done good. Now, I can just see Hillary up there. Now, Hillary would have, by the time Hillary finished speaking, I have got to tell you, nobody, not the Christians, not the liberals, not the Conservapedia people, not anybody on this network, nobody would have any idea what she said, because she's that good. She is that studied. She is articulate and is able to slice and splice audio on the fly. The woman can start out appearing to say one thing and end up with something else. Of course, she's going to be the next president, in my estimation. It seems that it's the inevitable march to her being the candidate. And I don't think there's anyone in the country that feels that any Republican has any chance whatsoever. I don't know exactly what we're going to do with that. Someone in the chat room pointed out the other evening that perhaps we've had enough of two dynasties. Two Clinton, we look like we're going on two Clinton presidencies, Bill back-to-back, and two Bush presidencies, and now we're talking about a third Clinton presidency and perhaps a Jeb Bush presidency in 2012. You know, the gene pool, you know, we really need to do something about our gene pool. We really do. Maybe something about training honest politicians, I don't know. And okay, all you lesbians, hang on to your hats. There are going to be some lesbians gnawing through the straps over this one. They're going to be gnawing through the straps and taking to the streets. This is just going to kill you. Texas University. He is a junior at Texas University, and his name is Ryan Hackner. And that's the University of Texas at Austin. He wrote a commentary for the Daily Texan, which is a little rag they have going there. And he's not pleased that you're not wearing dresses, women. He is not at all pleased that you're wearing... I mean, is it unbelievable that this is coming up in the 21st century? This man... Okay. He says, what's not sexy is feminism, not to be confused, rather, with femininity. He says, it's directly responsible for the disappearance of our beloved dresses and the adoption of pants by, quote, new women. He says, like all fashions, pants are symbolic of something, in this case, masculinity, through their allowance of physical activity, meaning you got to keep your legs together and you don't have as much range of movement, perhaps, he's tried to say it in a dress, unless, of course, maybe it's floor length. But pants give you greater agility. I mean, you wouldn't want to play football or hockey in a dress. It would probably restrict you a little bit. But that's not a good thing for women to be allowed physical range of motion. He says dresses are the antithesis of pants. He says that dresses symbolize femininity through grace and elegance. Men find elegance in women to be attractive. Listen up, you lesbians. And dresses are a physical manifestation of femininity. The wearing of pants by women represents the masculinization of the fair sex, which is not at all attractive. Yes, you women, you need to be living up to the male expectation. You really do. God put you on this planet to make men happy, and it makes them happiest when you are a sexual object. Listen up, you lesbians, I'm going to change your life this evening. He says, in advocating the wearing of dresses, I must distinguish between the flowing, elegant dresses of tradition and the more degenerate and immodest dresses of our present culture. The miniskirt, a dress of sorts that doesn't extend below the knee, is both lacking in modesty and elegance. Elegance is essential to femininity, and the lack thereof implies a sort of masculinization. Modesty is essential to feminine virtue, and the lack thereof implies a state of 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 horrification. Yes, the lack thereof. You're a whore, my friends, or a lesbian. Immodest, inelegant dresses constitute a degeneration and androgenization of the true dress. Now, I just finished watching a series called House of Elliot. It's old. It's British. It's about a designer. So I have like fashions and clothes on my mind because that was like the whole thing. These two sisters who fought their way up in the fashion industry. Now I think what this man is desperately trying to do, what he's really saying here, is he really wants a job in the fashion district. I think this gay man is screaming to find himself a job in the fashion district, perhaps in New York, because he has a lot to say on inelegant dresses, and he has a lot to say about What was the other phrase he used? Elegant dresses. Elegant and inelegant. And it goes on. Androgynous masculization of the modern woman through donning pants and suits and uncovered shoulders and unveiled hair. Are you believing this? Has in a sense led to the slow, and here's that word again, horrification of, now I know you lesbians are going to love this, you're going to chew through your straps, I just know it. It's led to the slow horrification of ladyhood. Now this is totally new to me, the word ladyhood. I've heard of womanhood, I've heard of childhood. Ladyhood is totally new, and it sounds so fashion district. I'm being asked in chat what the school is again. It's the University of Texas at Austin, and the man is, he's a junior, and his name is Ryan Hackner, H-A-E-C-K-N-E-R, and he wrote it for the Daily Texan. He says, in discarding feminine dress, women seem to have symbolically discarded femininity and modesty. He's got a lot of problems with women. He really does. I wouldn't even want him as a hairdresser. If I were a woman, I wouldn't want him burning my hair. He says, the virtues of women, it says they've traded it all in favor of sexual virility and promiscuity and immodesty, which are all masculine. The ideal form, and here we have it from an expert, the ideal form, now you're going to get this as, you know, advice from a top-of-the-line kind of university guy. The ideal for a true lady is constant, immutable aspects of humanity. And he says, this strange new development of masculinization can only represent a bizarre aberration and a perverse, ignoble culture. He also makes a statement, dresses are essential to any lady's attire and should be worn. So there you have it. How old do you have to be a junior to these days? I thought, what is that? Isn't that like about 19, 20? I see sophomore, junior's probably 19 or 20, yeah. So this man has remembered everything he was taught in the Fundy Church, and by his mother that wears a bun, and by his father that pretends to sleep with mommy and goes out and hires meth and man-ass. Some of my new listeners have no idea what I'm talking about. Believe me, there's a lot of history on this show. Yes, there was a minister. He was in Colorado. He bought meth and slept with a male prostitute for about 2 years. And it was fabulous. He had fallen in love with him. It was pretty obvious. The dirt. But there you have it, from Junior Ryan Hackner in the University of Texas. And he's distinguishing most definitely between the flowing elegant dresses and degenerate immodesty. See, the lines like flowing elegant. This man is a fashion district. He is destined for the fashion district. Oh, my stars. And just when you thought it couldn't get any worse. You ever heard of Nature Boy? Sometimes Blender Nate. Anyway, Huckabee is getting ready to go on the road with wrestler Ric Flair. Now, if you've ever witnessed wrestling, surely everyone has, you know, thumbing through the channels, you really can't avoid it. It's the men in tight pants, and you know, it's really very masculine for the men to sit and watch those hard muscles straining against the other and the chests together and the sweat pouring in those bulges and those tight pants. Yeah, baby. Oh, yeah, baby. So anyway, Huckabee is getting ready to rumble. You know, the IQ, can you just feel the IQ being sucked out of the room? He's going to be traveling with him, Ric Flair, a.k.a. the Nature Boy. And you see, Ric Flair has decided to endorse the Alabama governor in his bid for the White House. And CNN has telling us that the WWE wrestler is on board with the candidate, Huckabee. And he is going to co-host a campaign tailgate with the candidate, meaning Huckabee. This is Nature Boy, Ric Flair, and Huckabee. They will be together at the South Carolina versus Clemson football game on Saturday afternoon in Columbia, South Carolina. And I know you're waiting to find out more, but I don't have any more because the details are forthcoming. So, you know, if you're lucky enough to make it to the South Carolina and Clemson, I mean, maybe Ric Flair will be wearing those tight shorts. The shirt will be open and you can see those rippling muscles and his white hair, just dyed white, looking all studly like a god. I'm sorry, I just gone a little bit evil tonight. You know, what can I tell you? Some days I'm more evil than others. Okay, it's 10:42. I think we ought to do a little bit of a break and we come back and tell you some more stories. We have a new PSA, by the way. Bob is going to run it during this break. Let me tell you a little bit. It's from GLAAD, and it's the new PSA from GLAAD. It's the Transgender Day of Remembrance. It is a day to memorialize those killed of anti-transgender violence and prejudice. And the GLAAD is, of course, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. And they've released this new PSA encouraging viewers to treat each other with respect. I'm sure that if you lesbians would just wear dresses, you'd get all the respect that you like. And that's the problem. So as we go to break, my name is Peter Godbold. This is Strictly Confidential. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Round up the usual suspects.
Hi, boys and girls. This is Rick Goodner, part of the Weekend Wrecking Crew. And I'm here to tell you that you cannot miss Billy Shears. The man knows his music. The man knows what you're thinking. Tune in and listen. You'll be surprised. He's going to play the very song that you were thinking that you needed to hear. Now, he's a genius. Maybe a bit psychic. I promise you. Tune in on the weekend, listen to Billy Shears' Night Sounds, and you will hear the song you've been waiting to hear. And you'll enjoy your time as much as I do. Right here, on the Horn, Head On Radio Network. Make sure you don't miss what you've been waiting to hear with Billy Shears.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Play as time goes by.
Gay and transgender people are part of every community.
We are your neighbors, your co-workers, your family.
If someone you know comes out, we will endorse them.
You have the power to make a difference by treating others with dignity and respect.
Choose to be an ally and a friend.
Find out how. Go to glaad.org. That's GLAAD.org.
And we're back, and it's 10:47. I love that song. That was such a huge hit. Feels like I'm in love. Mm. One day I'm going to have to play that full track for you. It's just fabulous. This isn't particularly gay news, but it's horrifying. It happened a couple of days ago. I haven't gotten to it yet. You know, no news actually happens until you hear it on Strictly Confidential. This is my policy. This is my story, and I'm sticking to it. Former President Bush, meaning not W, but HW, parachutes, oh yes, to his library. Now, I'm not sure if Bob mentioned this before. I don't always get to hear all of Bob's show, but it's worth a reminder. At the grand reopening of the Bush Library and Museum, the HW version, President George H.W. stunned the spectators as he arrived to the ceremony via parachute. Now, it's not the first time the ex-president has made a surprise jump. In 2004, he did it for his 80th birthday, and he jumped from a plane from the Army Golden Knights, and he leapt with a team that day. Anyway, former First Lady Barbara Bush, with her string of huge pearls, no doubt greeted her husband immediately after the jump and welcomed him back to solid ground and her big old sturdy Republican... Never mind. Their children, Neil, and they have a child named Doro, D-O-R-O, didn't know that, and Florida Governor Jeb were all caught off guard, surprise, surprise, by the jump, and they evidently were not in on the plans, according to news from KBTX. I rather doubt that. You know, Bush, H.W. jumped during his time in the Navy World War. He was in the World War II, and his plane went down in the Pacific, and he was forced to bail out parachute and blah, 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 blah. And where was your son in the WOA? Daddy, where was I in the WOA? Bob is saying, no, he didn't do the story. He just couldn't. I have no pride. I'll tell you anything. I love dirt. I'm the Rhoda Barrett of gay radio. And a gay Italian choir boy was dismissed, by the way. It's an interesting story. He is an Italian, and he's been in the choir and been forced to leave the church choir after publicly admitting that he was gay. He's going to bring the case before the bishop. The story has, of course, has the gay rights group in Italy in an uproar. Religious groups alike. You see, he's 20 years old, and he was dismissed by his priest in northern Italy after revealing his sexuality in a documentary, God forbid, shown on Italian television last week. The priest, who is of the church that he attends, the young man attends, said he was disgusted by the affair. And this is such, the next paragraph, there's such a role reversal, you gotta love it. The kid, the 20-year-old kid, says, I tried to explain to him, he's tried to explain God's love to the priest. I'm just floored. I tried to explain to him that a true Christian respects everybody. And he accused me of not revealing my sexuality sooner. I guess he wanted him out sooner. But he said he had suspected it all along. And the young man is pointing out that the priest is just afraid of what some people might say. You see, the documentary is called Hey Darwin, and it runs on Channel 5, and it's owned by a private broadcaster called Mediaset. And it examines the lives of both heterosexuals and homosexuals. Well, surprise, surprise, they had this 20-year-old choir guy on. Now, I believe he's sung in the choir for like 7-8 years. He's not like somebody that just arrived to cause a scene. He's a committed... I located it. He says he's sung in the church choir for 7 years before he was kicked out. He says his family knows he's gay. He's openly gay with his family. And his family had been urging him to come out, like, what's the problem, son? Come on out. The weather's fine out here. But the priest did not care for it. Apparently the television show is loved by Italians. And the Italians in general are saying that he has extraordinary courage doing that on television in a discriminatory world, of which the Catholic Church was his first taste of that. And, of course, Italian gay groups are saying that this story is proof of the need for anti-homophobia laws. You know, there's so much news here. I'm not sure whether to do the one called Reverend Uncle Daddy or the gay rights group. Here, I should do this. It's Christmas time. It's shopping season. You realize there were, 34 days left in the war on Christmas. So I need to get this out. As if you needed another reason not to shop at Walmart, I'm about to give you another. The Human Rights Campaign, which is, of course, a large gay rights group, is giving Walmart a red, just like, you know, the safety warnings, you know, mommy and all the other ones we put up, you know, the hazard. Anyway, they've given them a red code rating, which means do not buy, in its new consumer guide. And this is against the Walmart store in the middle of the holiday season. Walmart is refusing to offer domestic partner benefits to its gay and lesbian workers. And it is the largest, of course, U.S. private employer. And in fact, Walmart was working with HRC. I'll tell you about it in a minute. Walmart rated a red 40 on a scale of 100. Now, last year they rated a 65, which was a yellow, versus falling down to red. Walmart is among 54 companies that scored 45 or lower in the 2008 Corporate Equality Index, which assigns ratings to 519 large companies. Also, red stores, by the way, it's Christmas, I need to tell you, Toys R Us, Radio Shack, and AutoZone. It's interesting. Remember when AutoZone first opened? Don't know if you have them in your area, but when AutoZone first opened, they named themselves Auto Shack, and they had no affiliation at all with Radio Shack. So Radio Shack sued Auto Shack because they felt they were taking over their names and people would think they were affiliated with Radio Shack. And so AutoZone is now what used to be Auto Shack. Anyway, just finding those two words in the same sentence prompted me to give you way more information than you probably wanted to know. Now, Target, by the way, which I like to call Target, has been given a green rating of 80, meaning that consumers should make every effort to support that business. Of course, Walmart's claiming that they are very proud of the steps they're taking in diversity. Of course, they're offering unaffordable health care, et cetera, et cetera. You see, what happened, Walmart was moving toward very gay-friendly practices in 2003, and they added sexual orientation to the non-discrimination policy, you know, things like that. And then all of a sudden, the American Family Association and the others caught on to it like Ford and threatened to boycott Walmart. And so, since the the shoppers at Walmart are not always the brightest bulbs in the tree, I don't mean to beat up poor people. I have to go to Walmart rarely if there's something there that I can't find anywhere else. But I think I'm going to cut that out. By the way, I bought some stuff at Target the other day. It felt good. Anyway, that's just another story. But anyway, their conservative groups were very much angered by Walmart's contributions to gay organizations, and they threatened to boycott. And so in June, the company announced a policy to avoid, quote, highly controversial issues, and the talks on gay benefits ended. So Walmart is, in fact, moving in reverse under fear of the fundies for equal treatment of their LGBT staff. Just thought I'd let you know, because Friday is Black Friday. By the way, do you go out on Black Friday to shop? Yeah, I have always avoided it. I have never. There was a few years back. Oh God, what? Almost 10 years ago. I worked retail, and it was a little electronics store. And I've got to tell you, the Friday after Thanksgiving, of course, the full staff was there. You know, and it's a mob scene. It is. And after being exposed to that, I swear to myself, never would I go out. I don't care if they're giving it away. I would not venture from my house to go shopping on Black Friday. And in fact, it wouldn't hurt my feelings at all if the whole damn Christmas season fell apart from lack of funds. Maybe a few more of the uneducated would catch on. And lastly, I'm going to do a report from 1981. Boy, he's really reaching out here. This came from, this year in history. 1981, mystery disease kills homosexuals. A mysterious epidemic has been discovered in homosexual men, and it's causing increasing concerns in the U.S. The unknown condition consists of two separate diseases, pneumonia and skin cancer. It's been found in X number of patients in X number of states. It's claimed 75 lives so far. Boy, that was the tip of the iceberg back then. And 92% of the victims are homosexual men. One death has been reported in London. The epidemic's being investigated by the Center for Disease Control, who in turn urged President Reagan along about that time to say something about it. But of course, it was a homosexual disease, and nobody ever thought that could actually jump the fence. But it did. anyway, that's how it all started. But there was a report I did the other evening. In fact, it came up in chat earlier. I had forgotten about it. Bob mentioned it. I'd forgotten about it. Apparently, they're saying now that the first strains came, first cases were in 1939, and that it passed from Africa to Haiti, and they were able to, analyze the DNA structure of the virus, and that definitely someone in Haiti caught it, and then that person from Haiti came to the United States is the latest. So 1939, that was back before God started sending curses to annihilate people, wasn't it? I mean, in the modern times. Let's see. It is a Wednesday evening, but we are going to be going quiet tomorrow night and Friday night in honor of Thanksgiving. We're going to be spending time with our families. I hope you enjoy yourselves. Now, I'm told that Billy Shears is, in fact, doing a show Friday evening. Bob, correct me if I'm wrong in production, but please be sure to tune in to Billy Shears at 9 p.m. on Strictly Confidential or on the Head On Radio Network. And gee, I guess that about wraps it. So here's Cynthia Manley inviting you to...
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
This is the Quality News Network. The war in Afghanistan has reached crisis proportions as the Taliban gain in numbers in more than half the country, closing in on the capital city of Kabul. An independent think tank whose members live in country completed a new study. Results indicate that if NATO is to have any impact against an insurgency, troop numbers will have to be doubled to at least 80,000. Ending months of speculation, officials with the state of New Hampshire announcing that their presidential primary will be held on January 8th. Iowa's caucuses have led the way for several decades, but New Hampshire has had the initial primary for even longer, since 1920. The announcement comes directly after the state of Michigan's decision to hold their primary on January 15th. The 2008 Democratic presidential race is tightening, Barack Obama gaining on frontrunner Hillary Clinton 6 weeks before the first balloting. That's according to a Reuters Zogby poll released today. Airports and train stations across the U.S. were packed with travelers today. A record 39 million Americans were expected to travel at least 50 miles this Thanksgiving holiday. Thousands of displaced Iraqis have begun returning to their homes, according to the BBC. An estimated 1,000 Iraqis make it back home daily because of a drop in violence, improved security, and incentives from the Iraqi government. In Islamabad, Pakistan, sports hero Imran Khan and hundreds more political prisoners freed today as martial law eased throughout the country's capital city. President General Pervez Musharraf may leave his military post as soon as this weekend. That's according to a top official under pressure from President Bush. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown apologized to the public today for a security breach affecting an estimated 25 million people across the UK.